I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny BT, and former World Cup winner, top 14 Champions Cup winner, won it all to lose assistant coach Jerome Kano. We will come on to all things Champions Cup, the format, pitch controversies, everything in between shortly. But first, the more important stuff, this time next week, Santa will have come and gone. I don't know how many kids we've got between the three of us, but I know it's a lot.
Too many.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. How are things in the BT and Kano household? Is it excitement or is it stress?
My youngest, he keeps asking how many sleeps till Santa comes. And I think the excitement's slowly building. But for me, no stress at all. I'm pretty chilled. I don't want to take the shine off my wife's work. She's been buying all the presents, been wrapping all the presents. So for me, it's just arrive back from work and just see the pile of presents pile up under the tree. So I'm pretty chilled.
Because she is the workshop, the elf, Santa, yeah. Mrs. Claus, Mr. Claus. It's the same in my house. We ask about the stress, but to be honest, I'm having a great time.
Johnny, you've got a glass of champagne. You can't be that stressed.
No, I'm not stressed. I'll probably be more stressed when we're back living with our families for 10 days constantly. So tomorrow we drive to Bordeaux, then we fly to Amsterdam, connect to Glasgow, 10 days of probably overeating. Pantomimes, too much to drink, family fights, scraps, the usual at Christmas, but I can't wait. Weirdly as well, like now not playing, you enjoy it because for basically 15, 20 years, you put it on hold. You don't get a Christmas, you don't get a new year, you don't really get to enjoy it or have that family time. So it's special. So looking forward to some time back in Scotland. But what's it like for coach now, Jerome? Do you get a bit of downtime and a bit more? Because like, for instance, my last Christmas, I can remember even being at cast, like we got given like weight goals. Like this is how much time you're allowed to put on when you go home for Christmas and stuff. And if you were one of the bigger boys, you had like 4 kgs, which was loads. And then I was given like 1-2 kgs leeway. But now as a coach, will you get time to enjoy it? Have the players got a weight gain to get back under? Like how's it all looking to lose?
Yeah, I think we're quite lucky with the buffer we've got in the top 14. So fingers crossed the match against Cast goes well. And I think the team will get a few days off over Christmas and return back in time to prepare for Clermont New Year's Eve. So I think the team will get a few days off. There's no such thing as a weight goal or anything like that. I think it's more performance goals, but yeah, fingers crossed it goes well in the weekend and then the team can have a good rest with the family.
With some of them, no weight goals, but you just have to say, eat one turkey, not two.
I think it's more barbecues because we've got so many foreigners from the Southern Hemisphere. And around Christmas time, it's more of a barbecue thing than a turkey and the roast beef. But for me, it's still bizarre being around Christmas time and being freezing cold.
What do you do, Jerome? Do you do a kind of mix of the French and the New Zealand Christmas?
No, we try and stick to our traditional New Zealand Christmas with the Christmas ham and roast chicken or a barbecue and mix in a few of the Samoan specialties like fish, bottle sami if we can.
But it's just freezing cold. You do all that and it just outside of the freezing cold.
Yeah. Okay.
Either of you dressing up as Santa, doing anything like that?
Yeah, I've got the suit ready. I don't want to say it too loud because the kids are running around. But yeah, I've got it ready in the wardrobe. Took me a while to find a double XL suit.
Do they not do them at Mintwear, Jerome?
No, not yet. Not yet.
There you go. There's a new line for you. You mentioned you've got a 6-day turnaround now until that Cast game. But then there is a bit more of a gap. But you're playing New Year's Day. So I assume there might be a few days off, but definitely no New Year celebrations, I'm guessing.
No, it hasn't been like that for the last few years. So I think the boys have come accustomed to making sure that that area is rugby focused, rugby time. But yeah, it's a quick week for us this week. So I'm sure all the guys will just be ready to perform and then hopefully get a few days off after if we can get the performance we want against Cast.
What about the Frenchies advertising these games as Boxing Day games? Have you seen this?
Yeah.
So like obviously Boxing Day for the rest of the world is the 26th of December, whereas France has advertised LNR top 14 Boxing Day games the 23rd, 22nd and 24th of December. Like have they just like taken the concept and thought, oh, it's a game like Christmas, we'll call it Boxing Day, or do you think they've just got confused?
I think they just mean because it's around that weekend. It's a good concept. I kind of enjoy it, having the special balls. And I think I've got a Boxing Day ball from the last 4 years playing in those games, just souvenirs. But yeah, I'm not too sure if they're confused or not.
They're definitely confused. It's very so French, Johnny. Yeah. Just relax. Who cares?
I love it. I think it's great. And nobody said anything either. Everyone's like, yeah, that's Boxing Day. That's the Boxing Day games. Get on with it. But completely the wrong dates. I love it.
And you mentioned, Johnny, you're traveling back to Scotland. So you look relaxed now. If we speak in 24 hours' time, you're not going to be relaxed, are you?
You can tell me. You can phone me after. I'll send you a WhatsApp from the second leg. I think as well, we don't get back into Glasgow. The first flight from Bordeaux is at 5:30. So we get into Glasgow at like 11 at night, 11:15. And bedtime normally is around 7:30, 8 p.m. So we'll see what state the children are in. And that will give you a direct correlation as to what state my wife and I are in about 24 hours time. But mate, nothing a glass of something won't sort out. It'd be good to get back and see family and have a laugh and also get some grandparent time. Chuck the kids straight back into them, which will be great. So now looking forward to Scotland. Also maybe go and see like the 1872 Cup. So the Glasgow-Edinburgh Derby is over December. So maybe catch some URC rugby and catch up with some mates. So no, really looking forward to it. It'll be cool.
Right, we'll have a chat about the second round of Champions Cup games in more depth shortly and get a guest on too. But let's get straight to it and find out what stood out the most in round two, Johnny. What gets the honour of being the meter moment of the week?
It comes from Toulouse.
No, of course it does. You play to the gallery, don't you, Johnny?
You got to play to the crowd, mate. You got to know your audience. No, look, there was one fella that had comparisons with Mbappe's performance on the sort of French press this morning, compared with Messi as well, and quite possibly could be the GOAT in our sport. It does come from Toulouse, but I guess we'll talk about him a bit later with Jerome and our guest. But Antoine Dupont again at the weekend. Oh my goodness. Ridiculous. He dotted down probably one of the best team tries that you'll see in the competition. Coast to coast, started by Thibaut. Flamand played out the back, eliminated maybe 6-7 defenders at the back to Romain Intermac, plays wide to space. Really nice piece of interplay between Delibes, Lucas Tauzin, who was excellent at the weekend as well. Another offload to Peter Aki, and Antoine Dupont dots it down 80 meters later. We're so accustomed to seeing him running that support line, but he just does it time and time again, makes it look effortless. And that was just the start. That was the first half. That was his first try. Another one, the second half, a pure foot race, but sheer desire, raw athleticism, the pace on the boy is just freakish. Again, running support lines. If you're a young scrum half, look back and see where he starts his run and where he finishes. Just absolutely unreal. So between his two tries, again, his work rate through the game, his service, his kicking game, he was a freak show again, and quite easily the meter moment of the week.
I was going to ask you, Jerome, if you agree with Johnny's meter moment of the week. I think maybe we'll just say that the breakdown was also very good in that game.
Yeah. Mate, I can't argue with that. I had another one, but...
Give us your one.
Came from the Lions Stade Français game. It was the try saver that small yes. winger put on against the loose forward in the corner there.
There we go. That, Johnny, that is a coach there. You just give it to the flashy stuff, Antoine Dupont. We give it to him every week.
I'm on highlight reel. Jerome's on like the unsung heroes, like the grit, the determination. I get it. He's a forward coach, mate. He has to be. But yeah, mate, it was as well. I saw the clip online. It was freakish as well. Really, really. You won't see better. It was awesome.
Edouard van der Merwe.
He'll be at Toulouse next season. That's it.
There we go. They were Johnny and Jerome's meter moments of the week. And Meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can now get 10% off any full price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you'll get 10% off any full price item at meter.com. Perfect for your Christmas barbecue, Jerome.
Nice.
Let's talk Champions Cup then. And before we get into the rugby on the pitch, we chatted a bit with Greg about this last week, but there's been so much criticism over the format of the competition over the past week or so. I don't know if there's been as much criticism in France as there has been in the UK, but Jerome, what do you make of it from a coach's perspective? Would you prefer the old, more straightforward format of a pool of four and you play all three teams home and away, or do you kind of like this format?
I personally don't mind. And from a coach's perspective, there hasn't, from our club, there hasn't been too much moaning and groaning about the format. No, I think as comparison to the last setup, it brings the urgency closer because you have to win most of your games, or if not for your first two games, to put you in good stead. Whereas when you were in a pool of four, you had a bit of that buffer. But no, I think it suits the way we like to play and the urgency and do or die type attitude that we like to go into games with.
It suits you boys because you win every game, so it's easy. It doesn't matter if it's pool or it doesn't matter what the format. I don't know, man. I think it's been really strange. I think fans have voted with their feet. Like, they've clearly shown a lack of appetite. Attendances are down. And I think when you consider as well, like, if you're thinking participation, as many people as we get into our sport, how do we get people to participate, watch our game? Like, we've already got quite a complex sport with the rules that we have. And I just think now with the format, again, this is a competition that I grew up in. It was the pinnacle for me. It was the best competition and you absolutely loved it. And I just think it's a little bit harder for players, coaches, supporters generally to understand that it sort of alienates new fan bases, in my opinion. I'd love to see it go back to the simple pool stage just for ease. I think that change in format combined with the South Africans coming in has alienated people, as in alienated fans. I think as well, there's been a couple of polls, like Jerome, you mentioned, in UK, France, the different markets, like Rugby Rama and Midi Olympique, they did a poll last week, like, what do we think? Are we going to participate in this competition next year? And 80% of French rugby fans said they'd be quite happy to see their teams move out and almost partake in like a top 16. They'd rather see domestic, their bread and butter, which they'd known for years, historic for them. And you can see why, because Antoine Dupont came out and said, it's no longer the European Cup. It isn't the European Cup. It's still advertised as the European Champions Cup, but it's not a European competition. It's being expanded to the African teams. You know, the keyword, the buzzword, globalized. The amount of people that messaged me saying this attempt to sort of globalize and generate a new TV revenue has left a poorer product for domestic fans, and something that was once the pinnacle has now become a little bit confusing. And that's like when you have a little bit of hesitation, people vote with their feet. And that's the sad thing for me. When you see the attendances from round one and two, I know it's not the same for Toulouse, but it's the sort of teams that are on the edge. Do people come or do they not? Like we saw in the South African teams, the attendances they got, London Irish hosting Montpellier, there was nobody there. Like a host of games where there just wasn't there. And like, you're used to seeing these games being the biggest games in the calendar year, and that's where you want it to go back to. So I'm not sure if they will revamp it, if they will relook again at South African sides, but it feels like a beast version, like a B version of a competition that I think we all used to absolutely love. We grew up with a new, and it's just lost a few people, and they could maybe do with altering or trying to find different ways to bring back a fan base, engage with people and make it simple, because that was the beauty of it before. It was pools of four, home and away. You knew what we're getting. You know what you had to look forward to. Off you go and do your job. And I think for fans now, it's a little bit more difficult to follow.
Certainly on the fans and the attendances point of view, you've got to factor in the fact that the Football World Cup has been going on. Whether you're UK or France, that's going to have been having a big effect. The complexity point is one that a lot of people make. And if you can get your head around the fact that you play two teams home and away, I suppose you can just ignore the pools. And you know, if you win a couple of games, you're through to the knockout stages, finish as high up the table as you can, you'll get a seemingly easier draw. But in terms of the criticism, we will have forgotten it all when we get to the end of January and you're looking at round four and it's really hectic. And then you've got a longer knockout stage, which surely is a good thing.
I would say it's the ease and the broadness of the appeal. in the group stages. That was the thing, the one thing you look forward to. I think for people generally looking into our game and looking, they'll understand the knockout stage is the fantastic rugby, because don't get me wrong, the quality of some of the games is phenomenal, but it's the ease for supporters or your casual rugby supporter to engage with it. I'm not talking about your avids, your people that will be there no matter what, but for a young family or explaining to kids, like, how does this work? It needs to be simple. Like, the more simple it is, the easier it is for people to partake and be part of something and support the club. And I just think it's a little bit more difficult than it was two, three seasons ago. But as you mentioned, Tim, when we get into knockout, the quality of the rugby, the quality of the teams we have, the product we have in terms of what we're watching is way better than it was 10 years ago. To lose at the weekend, La Rochelle away to Ulster, these teams, the way they're performing at this level is phenomenal. So don't get me wrong, I absolutely still love the game. Not falling out of love with it. I love the sport. But I just think for your casual rugby fan, they can make it a little bit easier.
You mentioned La Rochelle Ulster there. Another thing we obviously spoke to Greg about last week, he'd heard the rumours that that game may be moved to Dublin. It was confirmed on Friday after the pitch was deemed unplayable in Belfast. Dan McFarland, Johnny Petrie, pretty much everyone associated with Ulster, not happy at all, particularly because there was a delegation of 160 from La Rochelle that were allowed in, and there was no Ulster fans or supporters or anything allowed in. So how's it been reported in France, and what did you make of it?
So it almost because it's fallen in a French club's favour, it hasn't really been reported over here because, like, it's not a negative news, so it wouldn't make a bang. But, like, you can see Johnny Petrie and Dan McFarland's point. They did everything they could to maintain the ground. They maintained that it was 100% firm but playable, but then you have home advantage removed. But then to have 160 delegates, like, I don't know any team that I've ever played with as 160 traveling delegates in the stadium. That's rubbing it in. Like, you've got 160 fans allowed to go in and watch the game, and I'm sure there'll now be an investigation, because that's a game that La Rochelle, they won that first half 29-0, lost the second half 7-29. And home advantage could have made a real difference to Ulster. Like, you think the fine margins we talk about and the quality of the rugby we've just mentioned, Ulster there will feel hard done by. And, like, when you have 100, like, it's almost FIFA-esque. You've got 160 delegates coming in, but essentially supporting La Rochelle and what should be a home game for Ulster. And again, the rugby that we saw, and Greg was phenomenal again, like, absolutely freakish in the game. But you can see why Johnny Petrie, an old teammate of mine, now MD of Ulster, would feel aggrieved. He'd feel really hard done by.
In your game, Jerome, against Sale, it was billed as the tie of the round by a lot of people, and you did give him a little head start early on. But after that, was that about as well as you played for a while?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome to see the boys front up, especially after their little hiccup at the beginning. But the way we saw Sale play in that round one against Ulster, and Ulster aren't a walkover team. They absolutely bullied them. And for us, that the preview and the preparation for our game was set just by seeing the way they performed as a unit. Bloody physical. So for us, we knew we needed to front up, and I'm just glad the boys did in the weekend. It was awesome to see.
What amazes me about your teammate is whether it's Manny or a Richie Arnold or a Julien Marchand or a Charlie Famina coming off the bench, like Thibaut Flamand as well, it's the ability of all of these guys to hammer a gain line, like both sides of the ball. But even more impressive is when they do have the ball, to dominate collisions, free their hands, offload, and not allow defensive line to set. Like, I know it's the opposite. You talked about the physicality, but, like, take, for example, the try that Manny created where he just sits somebody down. That's pure physicality. Bump somebody. Yeah. Their defensive line gets shortened because they have to come in and compress. That allows, like, once one offload's gone, they're in trouble. But the quality of Movaka, UU, the handling ability to draw and pass between forwards and finish it, like, it's so good to watch. But it all comes from the physicality with that little bit of finesse. Like, it's so good fun to watch.
Yeah, we've been working on our set piece for a while now. And I think that for us, that's a given. But it's been a bit frustrating not being able to tied together our attack alongside our set piece. And in the weekend, things just happened to stick for us. Like, those offloads that I think that Luca Talzin tried, there were 9 offloads in that one sequence. And we've been wanting to see that kind of passage of attack for a while. And for us, when it sticks, and it looks pretty good. So hopefully that mojo sticks with us for a while, and we can see more of that.
9 offloads in one sequence. I've played in Scotland teams. We've not made 9 offloads in an entire game.
In an entire Six Nations.
Yeah, 100%.
Obviously, you focused on yourselves quite a lot to lose, but you mentioned you knew how physical Sayre would be there. You're used to that physicality week in, week out in the top 14. But from a coach's perspective, with other people talking about the South African influence at Sale, how physical they are, what did you see in their game that you sort of prepared for in particular?
I think it was just the game line that they were able to create easily against Ulster. And we've had Ulster for the last 3 years in the Champions Cup, and we know how they play, and they're pretty physical as well. So the way we saw, like, the Dupree brothers, the Curry brothers, Johnny Hill, the way they were able to just make gain line, make offloads, and then let their backs run wild. For us, we knew our forwards needed the fronts, and I think for us that was the scary part of it. If we weren't able to stop that, what would the game look like? So I think our forwards and most of our team were on edge, just looking forward to that physical battle.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, that's the coach's perspective. Now, arguably more importantly, Jerome, let's get a player's perspective. Someone who was really in the meat and drink in the physical side of things. And someone who might have a view on the coaching at Toulouse at the moment. Who knows? We'll ask him. Friend of the show, Manny Miafu joins us. How you doing?
Yeah, good. You know, a bit tired, but now we carry on. It's good to be back.
We were just getting Jerome's coach's side of things. So how did it feel out there? Jerome mentioned the physicality.
Yeah. It was definitely, it was one of the tougher, physically European games that I've played in myself. But we expected that, and we had gone through their video throughout the week, and we knew that they were a physical team, and that they, they liked it up front. So we were kind of ready for that. And yeah, it was definitely a physical game, and you know, it was good that we came out on top. And they're not an easy team, despite the score. I think we got some tries that definitely went our way, but no, we'll be looking forward to going over there and hopefully winning over there as well.
So does that mean that the coach has got the game plan spot on, mate? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think the coaches did their research well, and that was good.
You don't have to say that, you know, just because Jerome's there, you can say it was all down to the players.
No, I think it was spot on. Like, we knew that they were going to be physical, and we knew that they were going to be strong in the scrums and in their maws, and like they showed, they scored just before halftime with the maws, and like, we're a big pack as well, so you know, we thought that we had covered it well, and they just held the ball in and eventually drove over the line. So we knew that they were strong, and they proved it just before half time. So it was definitely something we were trying to stop. But no, we're definitely happy with the win in the end.
Jerome, can we get a live review on Manny's performance?
Oh man, 80-minute man. He's been building awesome the last few games that he's been out there. He's had a few personal work-ons that he's personally trying to work on, but for me, I think he's developing really well. It's pretty scary seeing someone perform like that and he still feels like he's got a long way to go. So from coach's perspective, that's pretty encouraging to know that there's a player that's been playing top two standouts every game and still feels like he's got a long way to move.
You mentioned the step-up physicality. You guys play a big physical brand of rugby, but playing against guys like Johnny Hill in the second row, Tom Curry, internationals, like how did you find going up against those boys, especially in your same position, the second row?
Yeah. I think for me, I was definitely looking forward to it. The last final we played, not the last final, but I think about a couple of years ago, we played Exeter and I was 24th man. And I think Johnny Hill got man of the match or something. But I was just, I really didn't know much about him, but I was on the bench watching that. And I was really like, I really loved watching him play. And I went up to him after the game and I said, oh, he had a great game. Even though we lost, but he just said, you know, thanks and everything. So coming into this game, I was really looking forward to actually playing him and going up against him. But you know, when you come up against like internationals like those fellas, and the pace definitely does pick up. And I played 80 minutes, but it was definitely a tough 80. Like we were ahead in the score, but they didn't stop coming back. So it was a lot quicker than the normal top 14 week to week. But you know, that's a challenge that I enjoy and look forward to.
And you mentioned Johnny Hill. He has got a little bit of a reputation of winding other players up. Did he have a bit of chat out there or did he keep his head down?
No, we didn't really get into it. I think I heard him laughing and, you know, Tom was, you know, saying a couple of things, but not get into it personally, no.
Like Johnny Hill, as the game went on, looked a little bit sheepish and a little bit scared because he was getting pumped. I'm not going to lie. Whereas Tom Curry from the get-go was in everyone's faces with Intermac. He was getting into a man and I was like, what's going on? But it looked like there was loads of chat. Obviously, there was different events we'll talk about. And there's been sightings as well, but it looked like they were just trying to like build an, it was almost shithousing straight from the get-go. It was like, there's so much chat. Did you notice that on the field or not too much?
Yeah, I did notice it. And like we were telling the boys and from our captain as well, like, you know, the word was just like, keep our heads, keep our cool. And from like the first minute when they scored their try off that, the prop scored his try, and Tom Curry went and grabbed Roman.
Yeah.
And then when we scored, like we kind of gave it back.
Peter
pushed, you know, pushed him off and the ref told Peter off. But from the start, there was a lot of talk, a lot of push and shove. But you know, even down to the 80th, like I could still hear Tom like going, like the score's like way blown out, but he's still going. So that just proves like his passion for his team and for the game as well. So it was a good game. Like there was definitely niggle and we were trying to get under their skin and, you know, whatever it takes to win, honestly. But, it was good. It was fun.
If Tom Curry's up there, who's worse? Who's a worse sledger? Who's got the worst chat on a rugby pitch?
Oh, you know, so we're going up against him this weekend, Nick DeCrespin. I've played with him in Australia and I've played against him and we've gotten into like some scuffles. And then when I played again with him, I was like, bro, you're actually a really good guy, but on the field, I like, can't stand you. but that'll be interesting this weekend. He's a good dude, but man, there's some guys who can really get under your skin on the field.
Mate, there's another one at Cast who's been back playing. He's also a coach now, who I played with as well. And I was like, this guy, the same, like great guy off the field. But even when you're on the same team, I'm like, mate, you need to stop, like Rory Cockett.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, see the reaction.
Yeah.
Like even when you're on his team, you're like, oh, mate, stop. Please stop. Nobody's enjoying this. Not even, there's no crowd enjoying this. We're not enjoying this. This is not working in the opposition. Please just stop. And then you can see him now. Like now he's passed over. He's a coach. He's like defense and contact skill coach. But he's had to put the boots back on, lace up the past two weekends. And he's still going, still chirping, nosing boys up. He is another level. So he'd be my number one. And he was a teammate. So I'm not sure what you can say. But Jerome, you must have, again, the amount of Aussies, you must have played against Jerome. You must have had some guys that are very chirpy over the years.
Yeah, I played with a couple, like Dane Coles. He was one of the best at pissing people off. Never really tried it when I played against him. But when I played with him, I was like, man, I think there's a line. I think you're crossing it. And it'd always be against the Wallabies or Springboks. He'd love chatting.
And speaking of sledging, Manny, and giving it to your own team, perhaps, we've mentioned him already for all the good that he does. Talk to me about Antoine Dupont's moustache? Is he getting some stick?
No, not yet. I think everyone's a bit scared to kind of tell them what they think. But I think he sleeps with that. I think it's a bit of a change for Antoine himself. I don't think he can grow a full beard. He's still only like 19 years old or something. But I think he's rocking the moustache for a bit of change. But I don't know, whatever. You know, if he keeps playing like that on the weekend, then, you know, he can keep it.
Do you get to review his moustache on a Monday, Jerome, or not?
Oh, we wouldn't, but I'm sure some of the other guys that are closer to him probably would. But we have this like a fines wheel where you spin the wheel, and if you do something wrong, but I'm sure some of the boys would probably pull up his moustache and make him spin the wheel just for having a moustache. He doesn't sit down dying. He'd fight it. He'll fight everything.
Is that because he's tight, Jerome? He doesn't want to pay the fine, or is it? He must have enough money to pay a fine.
He's not tight. Are you joking me? He's one of the richest rugby players in the world. Are you kidding?
Every second advertisement on YouTube is bloody Antoine Dupont.
And every club you go into, that wheel is different. So it'll be certain fines, or like in Bayern, my last club, there was fine amounts, or there was you had to like bring the shower gel for the boys, or you had to park your car behind the stadium over the hill. Like what are the different fines that you can get in Toulouse?
You pretty much got it spot on. Like, we've got wax your ass. We've got money fine.
Does it have to be arse? Like, in Bayonne, it was at the discretion. Whoever got fined, the social committee could choose. So, like, if you had a really bad bit of facial hair, they could wax off half your beard, or they could do your chest. So if you went to the beach, you look ridiculous, or they could do your ass. But, like, in Toulouse, is it just ass? Is that what we're saying?
No, it's just ass. It's just ass. Unless you've done it, like, the week before and there's nothing else to wax, then they go for right above the private part. So. Oh, no.
Johnny, they've taken it up a notch, Johnny, since your day.
Mate, they've gone pubes. Yeah. That's definitely a step up.
Yeah, but other than that, that's pretty much it. Like, shower gel, you know, coffee for the coaches.
Ah, who put that on there?
Oh, Dumashon, he's the one who wrote it all up. So he was the one with all the ideas. But yeah, nothing too hectic. I think no one really minds getting the other stuff. They just don't want to get their ass waxed. So.
But the wax, it's like then and there.
Oh, yeah.
Before the meeting in front of everyone. So it's crazy.
You don't book it in. It's not with a professional.
No. Okay. No. They've got wax strips in the room ready to go.
And you mentioned Julien Marchand. Is he in charge of it all, or is there sort of like a bouncer, an enforcement officer? How does it work?
Yeah, there's like a committee. Sofia Ngitun, Roderick Netti, Tom Ramos, you know, many of the boys who have... you know, they kind of run that social group and, they plan the stuff with families, you know, team outings and stuff like that. So there's a social, like, leaders group and also, like, on-field stuff. So those boys handle all of that.
And we know there's a few on-field sightings that happened in the game at the weekend, but in terms of the off-field sightings for the social committee, any that we can reveal?
No, not yet.
Jerome, do you want to put any forward?
No, not any official ones, but there's some ridiculous shoes being rocked around with the dress codes that have been worn. But I can't really tell them what to wear because my shoes are probably about 10 years old.
Name and shame. Who's rocking horrible shoes?
Oh, man. The French boys come in with some ridiculous shoes. Like, they come in and the platforms are like high off the ground. It must be, I don't know what it is. It must be something like... I don't know. It's like they're Balenciaga or it, like they must be getting these shoes for free. That's why they're wearing them or something. But they're just like this far off. They're this far off the ground. They're pretty much wearing high heels. So I don't know who's telling them it looks good. But
I mean, they've always been popular with Argentinians historically as well. So like, I don't know why, but they're like the platform shoes. They're really thick soles. It looks like almost half a hybrid of clown shoe, half something out of the 1970s. But they're bringing it back. The Argies are trying. The French boys are trying as well, but they look terrible. They're absolutely hideous.
When we would travel, Antoine Dupont would wear these Adidas. They're like bright, bright pink shoes. And he'd walk around the airport with them. But that was around the time when he was like the best player in the world, so no one could really say anything. When you're the best player in the world, you can wear whatever you want.
Yeah, but he needs to stand out even more. He needs to wear bright pink, doesn't he? That's what he needs walking around the airport is more attention, being Antoine Dupont.
And Manny, just speaking for the rest of the world, can I just ask, you not to wear those platform shoes. You're big enough as this.
That might be it. It might be a height insecurity for him or something. I don't know. I definitely wouldn't wear them.
And speaking of this kind of thing, Jack Willis has just joined you. So how is he settling in? And has he had to do an initiation?
No, I think he's settling like really well. Like as soon as he landed, he was straight into training, and he must have been learning some French on the way here or before he got here, because he's picking it up really quick. Same with the lineouts; like he's getting his numbers and his letters like all sorted. So he's picked up the lineouts real quick, and he's definitely a professional, Jack. So he's come in and he's learned everything quickly, and he already knows our game plan. But you know, Jack fits into our game plan, and he just makes our team better. So, and even off the field, we had a team dinner after our I can't remember which game. I think it was a Perpignan game. We had a team dinner, and you know, it was good. Like, you know, Jack's a great dude, and you know, I think he enjoys it here. And I know, I think he's just on a little 7-month contract for now, but I hope he stays. We'd love to have him, and if he's enjoying it on the field, you know, I'm sure the stud would love to sign him on for longer.
Like some player. Did you two see Dan Biggert, his initiation at Toulon, and actually getting the mic on the field and addressing the Toulon public in French? How good was that?
Yeah, I know. I saw that, and I was and Jack saw his own and thought he was laughing. He's like,
oh shit.
Like, yeah, I could never do that. But no, I think after the game he just sculled a beer, and but there was nothing to the extreme of Dan Biggert. That took some balls, man.
No, Jack put me on the spot. I think his introduction speech to the coaches, he spoke perfect French, and the coaches, all of them, started staring at me. They were like, oh, "He's only been here 2 minutes, and he speak better French than you."
He sat right. That's 7-month contract. That's it. You're done, mate.
No, he's a smart kid.
It's early days, Jim, but what does he like to coach? You mentioned he's smart.
Oh, he's easy. He's always asking questions, always asks for advice on what he could do better, little things he does in the game. Does it suit the way the coaches want him to play? And like, for me, it's just to let him run loose. You know, the coaches wanted him for the qualities that he did when he was playing for England and when he was playing for the Wasps. So we didn't really want him to change too much, but no, I think for us, from a coach's perspective, we want to learn off him as much as he wants to learn off us. We want to, like, his experiences, his knowledge with the international team and with the Wasps, how we could adapt our game, how we can evolve around being with him. So no, he's easy to coach, and it's great to be alongside him and seeing him play for the start.
In terms of the initiation, Manny, you normally shave heads, don't you? Is there anything else that Jack's got to look forward to at some point?
No, I don't think he'll be shaving his head. So here at the stud, we normally do our shaving of the heads at camp. So if you haven't played a top 14 game in between our camps, and you get to a camp and you haven't got a cap yet, then that's when you would shave your head. But he came in and he was on the bench after 2 days of training. So, you know, he's safe of shaving his head. I think he'd suit a buzz cut anyway, so he wouldn't be too fast.
What was your initiation, Manny? Did you get a head shave, or did you do a skit or sing a song for the boys when you first rocked up? What did you do?
I can't remember, because I was so, like, it was really confusing because I was back and forth with the Espoirs and stuff, so no one really could keep track of, like, where I was, or like some camps I went to, some camps I didn't, and then and they just, you know, by the time I was playing and then we went to camp, everyone just kind of forgot about it. So
have you just let slip that you haven't done one either, and now you'll be doing
camp,
one?
Yeah, every camp, Peter and David or one of the boys are like, I'm gonna bring up that you didn't do anything, and I'm like, mate, we're 4 years in, it's too far gone.
And you mentioned, Manny, that you went out for beers after that Perpignan game, but in terms of in a more official capacity, have you had the Toulouse Christmas party yet?
No, we do. No, I don't even think there is one. We'll find out. Maybe there's something brewing and organizing for after this cast game. But as of yet, we haven't had anything. We had a little thing with the young kids at the stud, and we did some signatures and gift giving. But as for us players and the families, I think there might be something on this weekend, but that's yet to be announced.
No Secret Santa then?
Yeah, we do have a Secret Santa.
Who have you got?
Paul Grohl.
And what's he getting? He's not going to listen to this.
he probably won't listen to this. Nor will he understand. But I don't know yet. He loves his fashion, so I might just get him a jacket or something. Or haven't figured it out yet.
Or some platform shoes. Or they go down a tree.
So it's a proper deal, this Secret Santa. You get each other some proper good stuff, not just like, I was going to mention something obscene then, but you know, not that kind of thing. It's a proper, buy each other something nice.
No, there is like some guys really come in with some like ridiculous gifts. Yeah, I think last year or 2 years ago, someone bought one of the boys a butt plug. So it's definitely, you
does
know,
happen then.
Yeah, it does happen. But you know, Paul's just joined this year and I don't know if we're that close that I'd buy him a butt plug and he would laugh about it.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah, maybe next year.
Yeah. Jerome, do the coaches get involved in the Secret Santa or not?
No, not really. I don't think we get invited to those kind of parties. But no, with the staff, we don't really do. Not last year we didn't, and this year we don't. So I think it's too much of a quick turnaround from the Boxing Day game and Boxing Day weekend to preparing for the next game, but also mixing that in with some family time. So I think coaches weigh it up and would you have a party or would you rather go spend some time with the family? But the players love it's awesome that the players get together and spend that time to be able to connect. That's what I miss about playing.
Man, you can still ask the coach round. Like, don't pretend that you have to be cool. Like, this is where this is going. Manny, what are you doing for Christmas? Because Jerome's coming.
Yeah, I invite myself.
It is actually being held at my house. So those guys who are hanging around here in Toulouse, they're all coming over. And I think Jerome's coming over, I'm not sure. But
he is now.
You are now.
And what's the food? Is it, we just talked about Jerome's traditional Christmas, but being over here is a mix for you. It'll be a mix of, there'll be French boys there, so it'll be French and Aussie influence at Christmas time, or what are you going to be cooking?
Yeah, it's just a bit, honestly, it's a bit of everything. Everyone's bringing a plate, so bit of Islander influence, like French food and just a bit of everything. Everyone's coming with their own plate and we've got be chucking some stuff on the, some meat on the barbecue, so there'll definitely be plenty of food here, but no, just a mix of everything, really.
When he says we're chucking some meat on the barbecue, it's like someone, some meat.
How many animals are going on that barbecue? And most importantly, just to put Coach Kane's mind at rest, no big night out on New Year's Eve, Manny.
No, we'll definitely be having a quiet one New Year's Eve. We'll be in Clermont, no, so won't be any drinks there, so.
I want to round back. I completely forgot to ask you both, but we talked about the niggle, the nose on the field, but we've seen today that Tomo Ramos has been cited for two things, for headbutting and for eye gouging. And I'm assuming that's for the action at the end of the game. Like you score a breakaway try, you think you score, but then everything gets pulled back. There's a scrap. Like it looked really confusing as well for you boys at the end of the game. Did you see anything happen or not really?
No, I wasn't near the fight or the scuffle. You know, when these scuffles get break out, like I'm too tired to be pushing and shoving. I'm using this time off to catch my breath. So no, I wasn't near it at all. But even the sail boys started shaking our hands and everything, and I went to shake the ref's hand, and he said, "No, the game's not over," and he just wouldn't shake my hand, and I was all right. So I just thought they were looking back on if there was anything going on or anything happened. But I took a knee and I started taking all my strapping off. And then Josh Brennan had told me that there may have been maybe a punch or something. And so I didn't think much of it. And then when they went back and said, you know, that there was a headbutt involved and Tomo got sent off, I was a bit surprised that we had to go back and then play again. And they ended up scoring that try at the end there. So I haven't seen too much video on it, but, you know, Tom is not a malicious guy. Like, he's not someone to go out and hurt someone, like, intentionally like that. So it could have been an accident, but, I think it's a bit harsh, and we'll soon find out the consequences of it.
On a slight tangent, Manny, we had your former teammate Zach Holmes on last week. We saw Steve Borthwick unveiled as England head coach today, and we were chatting to him as an Australian about Eddie Jones, and we can get your thoughts on it as well, Jerome, in the international game. Zach was very surprised that they'd made this move so close to the World Cup. He just thought Eddie's record at World Cups was brilliant Wire England doing this. Do you have a view on it as an Australian, and what's he viewed as, Eddie, back in Australia?
I don't know too much about Eddie. I know his coaching success and like what he's done in the past, and I heard what Zachy was saying, and Zachy's got reason, but I think like when it comes down to it, it's a bit cutthroat, and like I think like rugby even just recently is becoming a bit more like, you know, like these other sports where it's more cutthroat. If you don't come out with the results and stuff like that, they cut you straight away. But you know, whoever's paying the coaches definitely have an expectation, and if you know, if their expectation is results and winning and stuff like that, then you know, I guess it's their money to play with, and you know, their decision to make. So I can't say much on it. I don't know Eddie personally or anything like that. But you know, these are, you know, as a player as well, you know, if you don't perform, you get dropped and you don't play. So I think it's just based on performance and results. So you know, when it comes, when you're talking about it coming this close to the World Cup, I honestly don't know. I've never been in a international scene or even played or come close to it playing a World Cup, but I'm sure Eddie's got plenty of stuff lined up, and you know, finding a job is not hard for him, so I'm sure he's fine. It's just more if England can turn it around in a short period of time and make something happen in the World Cup.
Eddie's a particular type of character as a coach, and I think the way he was with the media and the public, and I kind of enjoyed his personality. When I played in Japan, I got time to spend. Got to spend a bit of time with him when he was working with the Japanese side there. He always visited the clubs and always seemed like a great man. But he had his way of coaching, and I'm sure the players that have worked under him would know what I meant. And we've also seen a few articles circulating about what type of coach he was towards his colleagues. But at the end of the day, he did get results wherever he went. And that's what I respected him for. And every time I've come across him, he's always been a great person to talk to and chat to. But going back to what he was like in the media, I just think with the job he had at England, he was kind of headhunted by the media in terms of whether he won or not, whether he got the results or not. So I think regardless of what he did, they were always going to try and find something wrong with the way he was. And I think it's brave of the RFU to chop them before the World Cup, but like Manny said, they've obviously got a plan, succession plan for what they want and what it looks like, and just happen to have Eddie Jones on the top of that list.
And you guys have got Cast this week. Johnny, is Eddie doing a bit of consultancy work with Cast?
He's got offers coming out of his backside. He needs a butt plug. That's what he's doing, man. He get one for Christmas. Too much. He's got I think he's got two or three NRL sides after him. Cast have asked him if he want to do a bit of consultancy. He's got the USA apparently. There's been loads of different angles already, but like, he's a talented, hardworking, industrious, successful international rugby coach. Like, he's not going to be short of offers. His legacy is fairly freakish, and Jerome, you just mentioned as well, as much as he's been maybe hard to work with for some coaches, fundamentally he's a good man, a rugby man, so he's gonna find an awesome job somewhere. Whether that's with Pierre-Henri Broncan at Cast, I don't know. I know they've said publicly they want to get him to come and do some consultancy. I saw Eddie, he also did a feature with Midi Olympique this morning as well. And he was saying, oh, bravo, Galtier, finally you've got a French team that can play a little bit like England. You know, just typical Eddie, like shooting back, taking the piss, and he's back on it. You know, he'll be focusing on his next role, wherever that is, and I'm sure he'll take all of his mischief into wherever he goes next, and he'll do another good job.
And Manny, you mentioned there that you've not been involved in international rugby, but we know from having you on before, and from you speaking to Johnny recently, you've just taken your French citizenship test, haven't you?
Yeah. So, I did do my interview, and I was, I shot Johnny a message like the night before my test, because every French person I spoke to, they said, you're going to be fine, you're going to be, but I was thinking like, they don't do the test, like they just get their passport. So I'm like, why am I asking someone who's never gone through it? And so I asked Johnny like the night before, and he sent me a bunch of stuff.
He terrified you, basically, the night before. He terrified you.
He did. He said, oh, they grill you for 45 minutes. But I don't think I got the same test as Johnny, because I went in there and we took a few photos and they asked me a couple questions and went back, signed a few photos and stuff, and then everything was all good. So it wasn't as tough as Johnny's interview, so by the seams of it.
Mate, Let's just say Fabian Galthié didn't set up my interview. That's all I'm going to say. This is clearly been set up. So it was a scoosh for you. I was shitting it. I studied for like a month because I wanted to nail it. But if I'd been you and I'd take a few photos, it would have been very different. So I'm guessing you got it then. It went well. I'm assuming you actually went through the test. You didn't have to take just a few photos. You actually did some serious bit, surely.
Yeah. There was a lot of questions about the French history and stuff, but it was scary. Speaking French is one thing, but then, you know, when you have to speak French about French history and stuff like that, it is nerve-wracking. And like the passport is a big thing for me, like for my future and stuff. So a lot of it was weighing down on this interview. So it was good that it went well, and now it's just a waiting game.
How long does it take to get the results, do you know?
So I got, like, you get an email which comes through like 8, 9, 10 months after that interview. That might just be in time for some warm-up games before World Cup in 2023. So the timing can be quite good, bro. But seriously, like, what's your latest contact like with Fabian? Are you staying in touch? Is he keeping tabs on your progress? Do you have contact through the club with the national setup with William Servat, like you mentioned? Is that all still continuing, or how's that going?
No. There's actually been like nothing at all, which for me as a player, I kind of wanted it to be like this. I kind of wanted, like, because there was always questions about playing for France and stuff like that, but there was no real legitimacy about it because I hadn't had my passport. And if I do get my passport, like, who's to say I'll even get picked? So for me as a player, I kind of wanted to put all the French side of French talk aside and just play for Toulouse. And when I do get my passport and I do, you know, hopefully get picked and stuff like that, then we can discuss my progress into the team and stuff like that. But no, there's been no chat with Fabian. My focus now is playing for Toulouse and playing well. And then, you know, and getting this passport as soon as possible for hopefully Six Nations and then into World Cup. But that's my focus. And then, you know, maybe we can talk to Fabian then. But no, there's been no chat. Like, there's only been internal chat with Toulouse and like what I want to do as a player and where my goals are at and how we're going to get there with and how we're going to do it. So, you know, I'm just focused on getting better. And I think if I can play at the best that I believe I can, I think that French stuff will all follow.
Mate, that's awesome to hear. And we talk about those goals. They can be incremental. They can be big changes. But like, would you mind sharing like things that you'd gone through with the coaching staff or ways that you want to adapt your game? Because you talked about not being the finished product, but the raw pieces are absolutely there, mate. Like, your performance at the weekend was outstanding again. But in terms of you moving yourself forward and becoming a more rounded player, what do you feel like you need to add, those little add-ons that you want to change?
Yeah, I think I work real closely, which might not be surprising, with the S&C coach. So we like work real closely. I think it's for a lot of big boys. Like, our actions are big plays, and our actions, you know, make a difference within the game, but it's just all about repeating those actions throughout the 80 minutes. For me, I want to be we're working on being a bit more explosive, not, you know, running the same pace throughout the whole game. Like a player like Thibaut Flamand, when he scored his try, like, you know, only Thibaut could have finished that. He ran that line hard and he's fast, you know, he's quick on his feet. He's got his long strides. So for me, like, working on my explosiveness and just being a bit more agile around the field and just doing those repeat efforts from the first minute, from kickoff to the 80th, doing like big actions, big carries, big tackles, but just doing it more consistently, and hopefully being able to do that not only in top 14 but also at international level.
And Manny, after the game at the weekend against Sale, did you go out and celebrate and watch the World Cup final? Because it started pretty much as your game finished, didn't it?
Yeah. So they played it on our screens at the stadium. So as soon as the whistle blew and we had, you know, did our little walk around the stadium, they put the game straight up. And then at our sponsors, and, you know, they had at the back, they had the game on every screen. So everyone was there, everyone was watching. And, you know, Argentina got on top. What a game, though. But I don't watch a lot of football, but I watched that game. That was a crazy game.
And you've got a couple of Argentinians in the squad, haven't you? So yeah. Have they been giving it some, Jerome, in the change room already? Or
no,
They're pretty chilled, but I've walked through the change room and the staff offices this morning, and there's a picture of Messi on pretty much nearly every locker in the professional change room. And in the coach's door, there's a at the end where all of them are, where Messi's holding the trophy, and they got the team photo. There's a few on the doors upstairs in the coach's offices. So I think that's their way of rubbing it in. But if you were to see them within the group, they'll be so quiet. They're really respectful, but inside they're pretty much celebrating.
No, there's a lot of photos going into our players group of just a bunch of Messi photos, Argentinian photos being stuck onto the French players' lockers. And I think, I don't know which one it was, but they had written, I think there's a Argentinian chant or something, or a song, and they've written the lyrics on like pieces of paper and they've stuck it on the lockers. I think that's their way of rubbing it into the French boys. But nah, it's all fair game. The French boys were talking it up before the game, and when Argentina had lost their first game. So I think they're getting their revenge now.
Like, speaking to some of the boys down at Castle, Benjamin Urdabijeta, the 10, had placed a bet with something, I think, 10 of the players. So if Argentina lost, he had to sing the French national anthem in a French jersey with a French flag and go on social media and do it every day. If Argentina won, he gets to pick like one player every day, has to get an Argentinian Messi strip, Argentinian flag, and sing the Argentinian national anthem on social media. So today it was Mathieu Babiot, the cast captain, was on his social media with all his followers, listening to him singing in Spanish in the Argentinian anthem. So they'll be loving it down there. I imagine there'll be a few, because there's Argies everywhere in France, man. In the top 14 in Pro D2, there's so many good players throughout the league. So I'd imagine there's a fair few bets lost and a fair few Argy boys enjoying this week in France, 100%.
We'll let you go in a minute, Manny, but given our chat earlier on, I think we should keep you on for this bit, because we're partnering with Manscaped in the lead up to Christmas. So before we give you the details on where you can get your hands on one, and they make a great Christmas present, let's face it, no man should be without one. We sent one last week to Winnie Antonio on the advice of Greg Aldrit. We've got a couple that we can send down to Toulouse. So one from you, Jerome, and one from you, Manny. Who needs them most? Who's the hairiest teammate? Who's got the biggest bush? Who needs one?
Oh, I'll go first.
That came quickly.
If this was last year, there's a few candidates, and it would have been Max Smedar or Johan Uge. Those guys are always shaving and leaving their hair around. Max Smedar shaving his beard. And Johan Uge, like, he's a hairy guy, but he likes to stay clean. So he's always... So he would have enjoyed that. But now... I'd probably say Sofyan Gitsin, like that guy. He loves to keep clean. He's always walking around, you know, butt naked, and he loves his body. So he's always looking after himself. So I'm sure a little Manscaped razor would do him well, and he'd enjoy that for Christmas.
And who's the opposite of that? Who maybe wouldn't necessarily buy one, but if you've got him in Secret Santa, you could send him one, Manny.
Oh, there's not a lot of hairy guys in our team, but
probably Charlie.
Oh yeah,
probably Charlie to shape up their beard. Either Charlie or David Ainu. I think those locks need to go.
Yeah,
there we go. We will send one to each of them, and for anyone else who wants one, they're a great bit of kit, and you can get your hands on one Manscaped products with 20% off and free shipping. All you have to do is go to manscaped.com and enter the code LeFrench. That's LeFrench. At manscaped.com. And once you've done that, Jerome, you need some pants, right?
Yep, 20% off if you use the promo code FRP Mintwear. If you go on to mintwear.co, sort you out.
See what I did there? That was so smooth, wasn't it? Seamless.
Are the boys rocking them at Toulouse?
Yeah, everyone. I think, Jerome needs a bit, like, he needs more money coming in through his pockets. He's been giving the boys boxes, and like everyone wears them. Well, I know for me and a lot of the big boys, like, that we love them, like, and they're like my game day briefs. So no, they're my everyday briefs, and I need to start buying them instead of getting them for free.
This one is definitely the coach's pet, Jerome. I can see he wears your boxes. He's having you around for Christmas dinner.
No, I'd have to tell the trainers not to give them any extras at training. So I'll sort them out.
There's your Christmas present, Manny. You won't get a butt plug this year. No extras.
Thanks so much for coming on, Manny. Good luck over the festive period. And it sounds like you flew through the French citizenship test. So fingers crossed for 2023 as well.
No, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Love being on here. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year if we don't talk soon.
You too, mate. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Great to have Manny on. We've had him on before, Jerome. Really good guy. And I'm guessing he's one of those that sort of glues the change room together.
Yeah, no, he's a good character. He's a big unit, but in the change room, he's gets along with the French guys, gets along with everyone. So he's always connecting with different groups. And but the surprising thing, he's still young. And what he's able to do on the field, but also just how mature he is off the field, it's just awesome and a pleasure to coach as well.
And he wears your pants. It's the full package. Yeah.
And he wears, man.
Absolutely. And he was modest about it there. And he obviously doesn't want to get ahead of himself. And he wants to do it in the right way, which is great to hear. But if Fabian or anyone else asks you, I'm assuming he'll get a glowing recommendation.
Well, yeah, of course. I'm a huge fan of what he's able to do. And I'm sure he's more than ready for the next level. But like as Manny said, if there's one place that you can solidify your position at international level, and that's with your club team, whether it's at Toulouse or wherever you're playing. But we're just lucky that he's with us. If he's able to put out those performances for Toulouse, then he'll definitely be putting a case up for the international team.
Right, let's round up the rest of the Champions Cup action. And Johnny, the Ospreys, they'd won one of their last 25 European away games, hadn't won in France since 2008. What on earth happened in Montpellier?
I don't know. You need to ask the Montpellier boys. Look, Paul Valence's, I think, 100th or 150th game for the club, so massive occasion for him, but they just, like Philippe Saint-André was talking French press again this morning about just he has no idea how they managed to have so little engagement or desire for the game, a complete non-match, he described it. So I don't know, man, but like if you don't engage yourself in a game, no matter who the opposition, and the Ospreys have got some quality players, Tom Botta, tighthead prop, used to play for Montpellier, Justin Tipperick coming back, like top class players. And if you don't engage yourself physically and mentally in a game of rugby, no matter what the difference in, you know, pay packets or structures in clubs or infrastructures, you pay. And Montpellier, really, after going away to London Irish and doing the business, really let themselves down against the Ospreys with a really poor performance, which isn't like them. They've been really good. And even they have a simplistic template and a game plan they play with, which is direct, aggressive, abrasive. And it just didn't work. They didn't pitch up. So a really weird performance and a really shoddy home loss for them.
And there's a few other French teams with some thinking to do, Johnny, because you mentioned last week that a few French teams could lose interest if they lost their first couple of games. And at the bottom four in Pool A is Bordeaux, yeah, Lyon, Racing and Cast at the moment, all having lost two from two. So do you think they'll be fielding kind of understrength sides, maybe taking it less seriously in January? Or because we know from last year that you can make it through with just a win and a few bonus points, do you think we might see them bouncing back?
I think they'll pinpoint their home games. I don't think they'll be fielding strong sides away from home. If you go through those teams, though, like Cast, I actually felt sorry for. They were excellent in Edinburgh with a second 15 and really could have won that game. Racing, the game was flipped on its head away in London to Quinn's. Kami Kamika picked up that red card and the game was essentially over. The Sharks, actually, to be fair to them, came to Bordeaux and they were excellent. They came to Bordeaux, which is a hard place to play. They were physical, they were abrasive. It was essentially a Springbok performance by the Sharks. But I think now with those sides we've just mentioned, like in Pool A, Pool B is a different kettle of fish because you've got La Rochelle and Toulouse that are leading the charge. But in Pool A, I think you might see a white flag be flown for those away games. They might try and pip it out and try and get a key home victory, but it'll be slender. The chance of going through, as you mentioned, even now they'll go through and they'll play away against one of the top seeds in other pools. So it's going to be difficult. I think now you'll see for those sides, their focus will return to the top 14, which will be their bread and butter. They won't want to lose any more players to injury or pick up knocks away in games that they don't need to be traveling for. So I think the away games, you might be seeing top 14 sides sending the kids. The Espoirs might be getting some game time, the bomb squad, as we used to say it, but they'll try and pick up a big win, maybe a bonus point win at home, and then give themselves a chip and a chair to maybe go through.
And all that talk, Jerome, of weakened teams, it's not ideal in a European competition. You want it to be the pinnacle. You want the number one team to be going out every game. But isn't it just a reality of modern rugby where we're at the moment? There are too many games and you can only play players in a certain number of games. So you're going to have to target the odd game, aren't you?
Yeah, it's something that I've got to try and wrap my head around because in the Southern Hemisphere, and yeah, we do have a lot less games it is all, you're always sending your best team week in, week out, whether you're out of playoff contention or not. You're going to send your best team, and that's something I need to get my head around and learn a little bit more about. Is over here there are a lot more games, in which competition do they prioritize, whether they're in contention or not? So, yeah, for me, it's not in my thinking, but it's something that I've still got to try and understand and learn. And I guess it depends what kind of club you're talking about as well. Some teams still like to keep their winning reputation, whether they're losing or not. They still want to try and win. And then some teams want to focus on either the top 14 or their respective competitions.
I think the difference for us, Jerome, like you coming from Super Rugby and me coming from URC, is the simple reality as well of not having, well, the number of games, but also relegation.
Yeah,
there's no chance of being relegated. And in top 14, you win three or you lose three games, you can really quickly find yourself in a relegation battle. And again, that's something that we didn't grow up with, so it's not natural, but you can see why there's much more of a tendency to protect like your bread and butter and your domestic competition, because if you don't perform really quickly, you can get relegated, which would be horrendous to one of the top sides in the top 14. So it's weird culturally growing up with something different, but then I also completely understand why they have to put much more of an accent and invest further into the domestic comps as well.
And just quickly before we go, Finn Russell to Bath confirmed now. How will we look back on his time in Paris?
Well, geez, it sounds weird to say. Like, there's a lot floating around the press about a £1 million contract, which sounds really weird when you put it in the context of like a cost of living crisis, but almost like a cost of rugby crisis where we've just lost two premiership sides, but they want to buy success. And Finn is one of the best in the business. It's also a step closer to home for him and his missus, who've just had a little Charlie, a new arrival. And how will he look back on it? Look, I'll look back on it with pride. Like, I hope he looks back in the same way. But for me, incredible pride to watch a fellow Scot, a Scottish 10, incredible to watch, light up the top 14, represent himself, his family, his country really well.
And obviously the rumour mill is in full swing, as it is every week. The latest is that Joe Simmons could be going to Racing from Exeter to fill his boots. If that is the case, wildly different players, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, I think they're different, but both equally as influential. I think, like as Johnny said, with Racing are a different team when he's playing and when he's not playing. Joe Simmons is similar. He runs that Exeter setup, and they're a different side when he's playing with the duo that he has with Slade and their backline. So I think he'll be a good fit, but both two different players. I think Joe's a lot more structural, where Finn's a lot more instinct to X factor, and he's able to do some freakish things. Two different players, but I'm sure they'll be both as influential in their respective clubs that they play at.
And you got to think as well, whoever is there working under Stu Lancaster, which is systems, slick, operating a really high level, they're going to fly.
And another All Blacks coming to the top 14, isn't he, Jerome?
Peter Gus. Apparently he's going to Clermont, but it's a double whammy for them, because I think his wife's going to play for the women's team, so which is awesome for him to be able to have that package, have that relationship with the club, extra relationship with the club. And mate, he's an awesome signing if they when he arrives. X factor, power, speed, and absolutely suits the way that Clermont play, and also suits the way that teams like to play in the top 14.
They're getting the checkbook out, aren't they, Clermont?
I think they need to. They've lost a lot of key players. You look at their 9 and 10, Para, Cami Lopez have both left in the last season. They're going through transition. Archer Aturia has just announced he's leaving, going to Bayonne, which again, a lot of people 3 years ago would say would something like that would never happen. That's a downgrade for a player of his caliber. Why would they go? Well, Clermont are in transition themselves. They look unsure, and they're going to have to buy big. It looks like they might lose Damian Penno as well. We don't know if that's sure or if it's done, but transition, they need to make a few big statement signings, reassure the players that are there, and then get themselves stability as a club so that John O'Gibson's side can work properly with quality players and guide them back to success. Because again, we talk about a juggernaut of a club over the past decade under Joe Schmidt, under Vern Cotter, and they've looked a little bit unsure. So this is a really important phase for them to get it right with the signings they make in summer and come back next season better.
And Mohamed Hawass maybe getting there as well.
Yeah, so released Montpellier looking to release a bit off their salary cap. So they've allowed Momo Huas to move out before the end of his contract, which I think ran to 2024. Mate, he's another one, like a lightning quick tight head prop, technically very good scrummage, gets around the field, very mobile. And again, they've had big tight head props in the past with Zirakishvili, Rabah Slimani as well. And they're looking for youth now, and he's a big part of the future.
Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Jerome. Thanks to all you guys for listening as well. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can, check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube, and have a great festive period, whether it's round at Manny's or not, Jerome.
Thanks, lads. Have an awesome Christmas.
Have a good Christmas, guys.
Cheers, guys. Have a great festive period to all you guys out there as well. And we'll be back with another episode in 2023. World Cup year, Johnny.
Manny's year, mate. It's going to be Manny's year.
Oh, fingers crossed.
Au revoir, guys.
Au revoir.
See you, fellas.